edition of the Dynamic Duo Show right here on DCNLive.com. I'm Kevin.
Okay, welcome to the live Dynamic Duo Show. I'm very sorry we had a little phone glitch here, but that's all taken care of. Thank you, National Security Agency, for clearing that up, deblocking me. All right, well, this is Kevin Barrett here on the Dynamic Duo Show. And we are going to be talking with a couple of great guests, as always. It's going to take a bit to bring them on up, though. First guest is Razia. She's a truth and justice activist from Peoria, Illinois, and she's currently in Palestine. We're going to have to work on getting a hold of her because, you know, the old NSA, I don't know. But we're just having some phone issues here, but we'll get those fixed up. We'll get Razia on the line in a little bit. Then in the second hour today, we'll bring on David Macko. Now, David is a Libertarian candidate for Congress in Ohio, just as I am in Wisconsin. We're going to compare notes and find out whether we can push this anger that's been bubbling up and boiling over the $700 billion billionaire banker bailout bill, and use that to hammer the two major parties a little bit. David Macko is a patriot. He wants to take back this country for the ordinary people. And we have just had a billionaire banker's coup d'etat, folks. And the thing about it is, people figured this one out real fast. 9/11, that took a while. Took a long while. It's still taking a long while. But this billionaire banker bailout bill coup d'etat has hit people right where they feel it the most, which is in their wallets. And a lot of folks are standing up and saying they're mad as hell and they're not going to take it anymore. We might see a surge of support for patriotic third-party candidates. And there may even be a couple of truth tellers and patriots in the major parties, although I wouldn't try to count too many of those. I'm sure we could count them without taking our shoes off. But the Patriot candidates could do pretty well this year, thanks to these idiots who are destroying our economy and not even really being very subtle about what they're up to. Now, maybe we could talk a little bit about that because, you know, I don't think a lot of folks fully realize what's happening behind the scenes with this engineered financial crisis, a.k.a. the financial 9/11. They brought it in exactly 7 years after the 9/11. That is, on roughly 9/11/08, these international bankers decided to pull the rug out from under the U.S. economy. So it wasn't just an accident. This was the result of a long-term plan. Now, I know a lot of folks are going to wonder about that. What's your evidence, Kevin, for saying something like this? Well, one piece of evidence that I haven't heard discussed very much, in fact, I haven't heard it discussed at all since the financial 9/11, is the fact that there were massive put options taken out back in, I believe it was early August of this year, 2008. People with big money were betting on a complete collapse of the stock market. You remember that. It did get some play in the underground and alternative and truth-telling internet media, such as good old GCNLive.com. And people were worried at that point. I think it was early August. I'll dig this out and get you the references later on. But the stories were that there was this huge wave of put options that were across the board in the stock market. And these financial types were just rolling their eyeballs and, what the heck is going on here? Somebody with big money is betting on a complete crash of the entire stock market sometime around September 11th. What is coming? Is there another false flag attack in the works? What could it be? Well, we now know what it was. We now know that it was a market crash. Now, how did they know that? How did big money people know back in August that there would be this gigantic across-the-board stock market crash right around, beginning in mid-September? Well, the only way that they could know that is if they made it happen. It's a lot like 9/11. You know, people say that foreknowledge of 9/11 is not the same thing as making it happen. But stop and think about it. Anybody who knew it was coming was presumably in on the plot one way or another. And since such a goofy plot as the 9/11, 19 guys with box cutters succeed in taking over four planes and, you know, guiding them into hard-to-hit targets with no air defense whatsoever, something like that, it's, you know, highly improbable. I mean, a Hollywood scriptwriter would probably be sent back to redo that script because, nobody will believe this. It's not going to happen. And yet, there was so much foreknowledge of 9/11, including highly specific foreknowledge. A top State Department counterterror official saying, yes, Randy Glass, we know that planes are going into the Twin Towers and they will be destroyed on September 11th. But don't tell anybody. Don't tell your colleagues in the FBI that we're walking through. We're tiptoeing through a nuclear minefield now. Don't tell anybody, right? That was just one example of the countless examples of highly specific foreknowledge of 9/11. And the only reason there could be such foreknowledge is that the people who had the foreknowledge were involved with those who pulled off the attacks. Likewise, with the put options on this stock market crash, the people who knew that the entire market was going down the toilet, and they knew that more than a month before it happened, obviously were part of the group that engineered this financial 9/11, this classic example of what Naomi Wolf calls the shock doctrine. Shock a whole society, and then you can have your way with them. You can get anything you want. You can get huge changes. You can consolidate power. And that's what this billionaire banker bailout bill is all about. That's what this crash is all about. There's a great piece by William Engdahl, which is posted, I've seen it on rents.com. It's probably up at other sites as well. And Engdahl says that what this is all about is that a certain financial elite is using panic to centralize power. Engdahl points out, I'm going to quote him now, he says, in every major U.S. financial panic since at least the panic of 1835, the titans of Wall Street, most especially since 1929, the house of J.P. Morgan, have deliberately triggered bank panics behind the scenes in order to consolidate their grip on U.S. banking. Now, they must do something similar on a global scale to be able to continue to dominate global finance, the heart of power of the American century. That process of using panics to centralize their private power created an extremely powerful concentration of financial and economic power in very few private hands, the same hands which created the influential U.S. foreign policy think tank, the Council on Foreign Relations, to guide the ascent of the American century. Okay, so Engdahl is telling us the same people who've engineered these crashes before, 1929 was, of course, a big one, are doing it again, and for the same reasons. They're driving their competitors out of business. Who are these people? Well, it's very simple. It's Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, the heir to the House of Morgan, and, of course, Goldman Sachs, Paulson's outfit. These three groups, and of course Goldman Sachs has now been turned into a bank. These three mega banks are now going to war for complete world domination. They're going to take down the European banks. They're going to go to war against the Asian banks. They're going to go for their new world order plan to take it all over. Financial dictatorship from behind the scenes. This is Kevin Barrett on Dynamic Duo. We'll be with Razia when we come back, I hope. So stick around.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry feels forever.
Okay, welcome back to the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm holding down the fort here on Mondays and Fridays, while Jim Fetzer comes on Tuesdays through Thursdays. Well, I guess we haven't been able to get through yet to Razia, who is in Harris, Palestine. Apparently, communications to Palestine are a little iffy. So we're going to keep on trying, hopefully bring her up a little later, get some boots-on-the-ground reports on what's actually happening over there. Meanwhile, I do have a caller, so let's go ahead and bring him on. It's one of my favorite regular callers, Mike from Kentucky. Come on in, Mike. What's up?
Hey, thanks for putting me on, and you kick me off as soon as you get Rozzy.
All right. Well, we'll see about it. You might be able to stick around and, you know, kibitz a little bit. So how's it going?
Oh, pretty good. My car's mostly packed. I'm going to go down to Red River Gorge and go climbing for the weekend. And it's beautiful weather, beautiful day.
Beautiful day up here in beautiful central Wisconsin also. I'm really enjoying the natural sights up here in the woods while I campaign for Congress. Got a little log cabin tucked away in the woods. That's my current congressional campaign headquarters and hideout.
Yeah, technology can be wonderful, can it? I mean, you're out there in a cabin in the woods and campaigning at the same time. That's pretty darn cool.
Well, that's right. I even have DSL for the first time in my life. It's amazing. My previous log cabin didn't have that, and so I'm even more technologically up to date right now out here in the middle of nowhere than I've ever been before.
Well, in the midst of all this beautifulness, I think that everyone should really probably just panic right now while they still can.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Take a deep breath. Look at the wonders of nature and relax, and then suddenly push the panic button. It's falling.
Oh, it's so crazy! I can't believe it. I really hope that this all pans out very well. It's certainly waking a lot of people up that something's seriously wrong, and that's good.
Well, you know, we just did a poll here. My campaign commissioned yet another scientific poll. And we found that 70% of the people in my district are against the billionaire banker bailout bill, despite the media propaganda onslaught in favor of it.
Hallelujah.
That's a good sign.
Hallelujah. Yeah, I mean, even I don't understand it. You know, I don't know what they're saying, but I don't agree.
No, we're taking $700 billion of our tax money. I mean, that's one thing that a lot of people can understand.
Yeah.
A lot of people understand that our country is deeply in debt, just beyond deeply in debt. We're, what, $10 trillion in debt, and that taking on another trillion-plus in one fell swoop just doesn't seem to be that smart, especially since we're not bailing out the people who are being kicked out of their homes. We're bailing out the billionaire bankers who are out there partying like there's no tomorrow, which maybe there isn't. I don't know.
No, we got 4 billion years left on our sun. After that explodes, we're done. But
well, that's right. So, yeah, what's the hurry then, huh?
It's so outrageous. I mean, the 9/11 first responders, you know, get pushed aside for the bailout, and we're already talking about a bailout for the bailout. And
right, they're going to bail the bailout out.
And the homeowners are hung out to dry, put out in the street. I'm telling you, it's just I don't know. I was hoping things wouldn't have to get really bad before we could start turning them in a seriously good direction, but maybe that's what has to happen, and it sure looks like it's underway.
Well, yeah, the ordinary people haven't really felt the pain of this yet, but I think they will. And once they start to, I think they're going to be even less happy with the way things are going than they are now. By the way, Mike, did you see that? That AIG, you know, our favorite American insurance group, our favorite multinational financial institution, is now in hot water. And a lot of folks here in Wisconsin have heard about this. I'm hearing about this, like, in the post office and the cafe, because they went to this munificent, this outrageously opulent kind of bash, this huge party. They threw themselves a celebration party after the bailout passed.
I did hear about that. I did. I don't own a television. I do not watch television. Sometimes I miss things. Usually I hear about stuff word of mouth if I don't catch it on the net. But I did catch that on the net, that they threw a big party. And is that the company that insured the World Trade Center?
They were involved with the World Trade Center financial shenanigans. And, in fact, their former CEO, Maurice Hank Greenberg, is one of the leading suspects in 9/11. And get this, after they threw this party to celebrate the bailout, and, you know, we're out there, you know, sipping champagne and gobbling caviar and stuff on this, you know, gigantic lawn of this huge old plantation-like vacation place they'd rented, you know, and then Hank Greenberg comes and weighs in, and he says, well, you know, they're really out of control now. He says, back when I was running the company, you know, we didn't do anything this bad. You know, all we did was blow up the World Trade Center and murder 2,500 Americans. But, you know, these guys are out of control now.
They kept the party under wraps.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man.
And there's another case, too. I guess another big financial outfit just threw a big party on the Italian Riviera, and that's the latest. These people are shameless.
They are totally shameless and soulless. You know, I hope they enjoyed themselves, and I hope it's the last time they get to.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Mike, I don't know. I think that the ultimate level of reality, people who are forced to try to satisfy themselves and make themselves feel like life is worthwhile by going out and behaving this way, are clearly they're not getting it. They're missing the real reality, which is ultimately eternal, and their souls are going to be dealing with that baseline eternal reality when they die. And this kind of behavior that gets them further and further away from that will shrivel their souls to the point that they're really not going to be in very good shape as their bodies inevitably, you know, wither away and fall apart, and finally they have to shuffle off this proverbial mortal coil, and they'll get there. So don't worry about it.
I don't worry. Yeah. I mean, that's something I preach to all my people. Don't worry. You know, if there's something wrong and you can do something about it, do what you can do. And like with 9/11 Truth and the Fed and all this kind of thing, getting the truth out is a day-to-day, everyday thing. You can do it in one way or another as long as you're breathing. And you should. And then you should not worry, because you've done what you can do. And if
Absolutely.
There's something, yeah, and if there's something wrong and you can't do anything about it, you should also not worry, because there's nothing you can do about it.
Okay, well, there is something we can do about 9/11. We can get the word out in so many ways, and of course, tomorrow is the 11th of the month. And even though there are some bad people over at truthaction.org who've been going bananas and attacking me and just behaving very badly, I still say that they've done some good work, including getting the 11th of the month action going. So get out
here
tomorrow on Saturday the 11th. We'll be back.
Cascadia Public Radio.
Day tripping through the beautiful Friday afternoon here in the heartland of the former United States of America, right here on the Dynamic Duo Show on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I am on here Mondays and Fridays. Co-host Jim Fetzer comes on Tuesdays through Thursdays. Obligatory disclaimer, I do not agree with every single one of Dr. Fetzer's opinions. All right, now that we've gotten that taken care of, let's get back to business. My scheduled guest, Razia, who's in Harris, Palestine, has thus far been unable to get through to us. Who knows what's up? Maybe it's Mossad. Maybe it's NSA. Maybe it's just bad luck. Who knows? But we're going to have to just get through this first hour without Razia, it looks like. In the second hour, we'll be bringing on David Macko. He's a congressional candidate in Ohio, a libertarian and a patriot. We may even bring him on a little bit early. And if you want to call in, we do have a little bit of airspace available, special low rates. Step right up. The number here is area code 866-582-9933. That's 866-582-9933. And I believe we still have Mike from Kentucky on the line. Let's just check in there. Mike, you still there?
I'm still here.
Hey, all right. Yeah, so, you know, we do have the 11th of the month coming up tomorrow. Good day to get out there and hand out 9/11 Truth DVDs. hold up some banners, make some noise. You got any plans?
Yeah, my group, my little local group here, small but committed, or should be. No, I mean, they're good people, and they're very dedicated to the cause. They're going to be at a farmer's market. We've actually rented a space, or claimed a space. I'm not sure if there's any money exchanged or not. And we have tables and chairs and a big banner advertising Richard Gage in Cincinnati on October 25th, and some tickets to sell, and lots of, you know, DVDs. I think we got 500 coming, and you know, literature flyers to pass out. And then the next day, they're not done with the 11th. They'll go out on the 12th too to Hyde Park Square. I'm going down to Rocktoberfest, which is the big climbing extravaganza in Red River Gorge, Kentucky. It's a world-class climbing area. People come from all over the world to climb there, and there will almost certainly be hundreds of people from all across the country, and I'll be doing the business down there.
Hey, cool. Well, you know, I think climbers are people who probably would be a good bet for this, being, you know, a little bit adventurous.
We're adventurous, and we're international, too. You know, we're connected to nature generally. I mean, you can't really speak too broadly anymore. It used to be a pretty small club, and now it's gone mainstream, and I think that's good. You know, we're primates, and we're kind of born to climb.
Well, ever since we came down out of the trees, we've kind of wanted to go back up.
Yeah, exactly. If fear of falling is a innate in our nature, and facing fear repeatedly, you know, is a good thing. You become accustomed to it, and it's not so scary anymore once you do it once or twice.
Well, that has some parallels to doing 9/11 truth activism.
It does. It does. Yeah, facing fear is a big thing. You know, the first time you asked a girl for her number or a date or whatever, or, you know, the first time you got behind the wheel of a car, these things that everybody can relate to that, oh, you know, oh boy, I'm scared, but it's okay, it's fun after you get into it.
Yeah. we probably better not get too far into that right now, but, you know, yeah, I hear what you're saying there, Mike, you know, I love climbing, too. You know, that's a good point that, you know, another way to build the, you know, spread the truth about all these things is to talk to people in whatever kind of social groups that you're already a part of.
Yeah, I think that's key, you know, and what everybody I know, myself and everybody I've talked to runs into, is a lot of stone walls and people that just can't go there. And that's okay. You just have to move on and try somebody else and come back to that person. I think even David Ray Griffin has mentioned this a number of times, that he had to be pestered for 6 months or a year or something before he would look into 9/11, you know.
I think it was actually a little longer than that, as I recall.
Was it really?
I think it was over a year, yeah.
Wow. Well, so there you go. I mean, there's a perfect example. You have to, you know, don't be, like, annoying and off-putting by being, you got to have a little patience. And it's hard to be patient when the situation is urgent. But that's what we have to do. It's a balancing act.
Well, it is hard to be patient, and you know, looking back, it can be frustrating. You know, you say, well, you know, if people had just been paying attention on this, if people had been willing to listen to reason, if they'd, you know, opened up their minds a little bit several years ago, we wouldn't be in this kind of situation that we're in right now. You know, we could be in a vastly better situation than we are now. And you could run that kind of, you know, if only kind of thing about the Kennedy assassination, for example. You know, if people had figured that one out, which it wasn't that hard to figure out, you know, we wouldn't have traveled this road that we've traveled. We'd still have our Constitution. We'd probably have a much more peaceful world. A tiny fraction of what's being now spent on the military would be spent on that, and all that money would be used for much better, more, you know, human purposes. And, you know, we'd be in, you know, relatively a paradise compared to the world as it exists today. And all these historical turning points really matter.
Yeah, indeed. That shoulda, coulda, woulda is an endless road that goes nowhere. Unfortunately, we cannot turn back the clock, and all we can
do is have to get it right this time.
Right. You know, go forward. You know, I used to tell my students in the field when I was a wilderness guy that, you know, the past you can't do anything about except learn from. And the future is uncertain, and all we really have is right now. That's the only thing we ever really have is right now. And so what you do right now is the only thing you can do to affect the future. You know, it's okay to plan and look ahead and stuff like that, but living in the moment, be here now, you know, be present, pay attention to what's going on is of critical importance. That I really think our society, our media, our culture kind of tries to steer you away from. You know, it's all about distraction. It's all about other stuff than just, you know, I hate to sound trite, but be here now is pretty good.
Yeah, well, I think we've been kind of numbed by prosperity. You know, we're on a gerbil wheel, you know, racing along in that wheel. You know, and of course, if you stop, then you go, you know, whoa, whipped around and around. You don't want to stop. You have to keep going once you're running on that gerbil wheel. And, you know, if we actually reach a situation in this financial crunch where there's no longer all that prosperity numbing us, and we won't have these gerbil wheel jobs to run on to try to keep the consumer goods falling into our laps, I think there's going to be a real new situation there, and that will present an opportunity for those of us who are trying to help people wake up to reality. We haven't had this kind of situation for a long time. After JFK, the nation was still on an upswing of prosperity. At 9/11, and you know, we weren't hurting at all. You know, we were told to go shopping, but this time, you know, if it really gets as bad as it looks like it might, it's going to be a brand new situation that nobody, you know, will have had any kind of a parallel to this in generations.
It's a new day.
And may present opportunities.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Opportunities for good and evil.
Well,
and we just got to do everything we can to steer it in the good direction. I don't think I've ever plugged this on your radio shows before. There's everybody Google the story of stuff. It's a great little video presentation about our economy, basically. You know, the resource extraction, production, consumption, and disposal. It's wonderful. TheStoryOfStuff.com.
That's right. I have seen that. It's definitely worth watching, The Story of Stuff. Okay, we'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett on the Dynamic Duo Show talking with Mike from Kentucky. We'll be back in a bit. Stick around.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Okay, welcome back to the Dynamic Duo Show right here on GCNLive.com. The home of truth-telling Patriot Radio. And we do have a truth-telling Patriot on the line with us now. We were unable to get a hold of Razia. She's a truth-telling Patriot, too, by the way. She's over there in Palestine. Hope she's okay. Hopefully we'll be hearing from her at some point, and that'll be great. But for the meantime, here we're going to go straight into our second-hour guest, scheduled second-hour guest. He's going to come on a little bit early. It's David Macko. David is a fellow libertarian candidate running for Congress in Ohio, and once I discovered what a truth-telling patriot he was, I went ahead and endorsed his candidacy, and he reciprocated and endorsed mine. So, hey, if you live in Ohio, to think about pitching in and helping David. So let's go ahead and bring him on. Welcome, David Macko. How's it going?
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. I hope Razia and all the other oppressed people of Palestine have an improvement in their condition. Of course, that depends on us restoring liberty here and constitutional government and the foreign policy of the Founding Fathers.
Well, that's a good point. I know on my issues page, one of my issues is let's return to George Washington's foreign policy. In his farewell address, George Washington warned us against passionate attachments to foreign nations, getting involved in foreign quarrels. And what else have we done over there in Palestine? We've spent over $100 billion in aid to the Zionists. And the total cost of our supporting Israel in that conflict, according to some realistic totals, is over $1 trillion, David. So
I saw the figure $1.6 trillion, and I'm going to be stealing that from your platform.
Well, you're welcome to. You know, it's not copyrighted. This
right.
stuff is out there for anybody to figure it out if they feel like it.
Yeah. I wish
more people would.
I don't think they'll give it back, but yeah, we should ask for it.
Yeah, right. I guess, my platform is let's ask for that money back.
Yes.
And I don't think it'll come back to us real fast.
But I
do think
that
the international financial industry, especially these biggest banks that are consolidating into sort of a three-part, three-headed Medusa, that's eating our country and trying to eat the world right now. That's the J.P. Morgan Chase interests. Citigroup, and of course Goldman Sachs, right? These are kind of the three big banks left standing that are trying to swallow the world. And, you know, I think if we went after them and asked them to give it back to our nation's treasury, we could actually probably get more than a trillion.
This is the greatest robbery in history. I think that somewhere in hell, Al Capone and John Dillinger and Bonnie and Clyde and the James Brothers must be drooling for the time that they'll meet Paulson and Bernanke so they can compare notes. And I hope that time comes soon for Paulson and Bernanke.
Indeed. Yeah, it's just so ridiculous. I was saying in the introduction to today's show that, and I don't know if you heard about this, David, but back in, I believe it was early August, there was a sudden rash of reports in the financial industry that people were panicking because they saw a whole rash of put options. A lot of money was put into these across-the-board put options. It wasn't like the put options before 9/11, which were focused on United and American mm-hmm. Airlines and Morgan Stanley Dean Whittier, which had a couple of floors of the Trade Center. But these were across the board, the entire market. So somebody was betting that the entire market was going to crash somewhere in mid-September. And these financial industry sources were, you know, pulling their hair out. They're, what's going on? I mean, what's coming? Is an asteroid going to hit the Earth? Well, it turns out that they knew exactly what was coming, apparently.
Okay. When Martha Stewart allegedly engages in insider trading, she's thrown into prison for a couple of years. I'd be curious to know, as someone who has a retirement fund that I live off of, who these folks were back in August. I think even the average American would be a bit curious about it now, especially if you're watching the stock market for the last week and a half, if you have a strong enough stomach for that.
I would think they would be interested.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if any of my listeners have more information on this, I haven't seen anybody making this connection, which strikes me as very strange because there was that, you know, that bubble of news back, again, I think it was early, it might have been late July, but it was you know, month and a half before this thing happened. And there were people on these finance industry internet boards who were saying, this is crazy. I mean, somebody's betting that the whole market is going down the toilet.
I missed that. Well, this is another indication that the international banksters were planning this. Nothing happens by accident. Everything's planned.
It sure is starting to look that way. You know, I try to go by evidence and not just pattern recognition, but at a certain point, it's looking to me like that just means that it takes me a little longer to figure things out than I could have easily known using pattern recognition right away.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this current situation is really interesting in that they're trying to use this to engineer more and more centralized control, and yet there's always the chance that it could spin out of control and take them down.
Let's call it by its proper economic name, which is fascism. There's also those reports of the 3,000 or 4,000 troops stationed in the United States now for crowd control or such.
And that's a blatant violation of the Posse Comitatus Act, which says that there can be no troops used in this country for law enforcement. If founding fathers would be rolling over in their graves if they could see this.
Well, that was repealed back in, by which? The John Warner and Defense Act, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
The Military Commissions Act, one of them. By the way, before we go further, I favor repeal of all of Bush's police state measures and the ones from Clinton and the presidents before. Sometimes I've toyed with the idea of a campaign slogan, repeal the 20th century, and this one, too. That covers everything. From there, you either, if the person who is talking to you is well-informed, you get complete agreement. If not, you have a good opening to educate him on areas where he's a little weak.
Well, that's a great slogan because, you know, that's one for waking people up. You know, my liberal, progressive, you know, friends from the academy, the people I used to hobnob with before they booted me out for telling too many truths, you know, those people would not get it. You know, repeal the 20th century. What do you mean? You know, life's getting better and better. We're more and more progressive every year. No,
oh,
you're
yeah.
not.
Oh, yeah, better and better. Down to 8,400 today.
Right, right. And the, yeah, world wars and genocides and so on. I'm not sure the 20th century was really such great shakes.
There's one great thing about the 20th century for future historians, if there are any, if civilization does survive. There are so many bad examples that can be used to educate people.
There
it's
you
a
go.
Whole that's... century of whole century of horrible examples. Income
don't
tax, Federal
don't
Reserve,
people.
Two world wars, genocide, the whole horrible mess, you know.
Yeah, that reminds me of a little a slogan. I think it was an Ashley Brilliant postcard that my uncle used to tack up on his wall that said, "The purpose of my life is to serve as a warning to others."
That's the 20th century.
There you go. Yeah, well, hopefully we'll pull out of that and have a new century here. But, you know, what do you see as the kinds of changes that we need to leave the evil 20th century behind?
Okay, first we need to restore liberty. That means, as I said a minute or two ago, that we need to get rid of the Patriot Act, the Real ID Act, the Military Commissions Act, the repeal of habeas corpus, the repeal of posse comitatus, all of the laws that are setting up a police state, both by Bush and previously by Clinton and his predecessors. We need to do that.
You're
we
here.
Need to establish justice. I favor having all juries informed by all federal judges that they have the right to rule on the case as well as the law. If you have a minute, I can quote from Chief Justices of the United States who recommended that. For example, here we go. I don't want to have dead time.
Yes, well, I'm aware of that. I'm an old supporter of FIJA, the Fully Informed Jurors
Absolutely.
Association.
Absolutely. Excellent people. Excellent people. Chief Justice John Jay said, "The jury has the right to judge both the law as well as the facts in controversy." Harvey Wendell Holmes, "The jury has the power to bring a verdict in the teeth of both law and fact."
All right. Well, that's absolutely right, because the jury is the bulwark of liberty.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a law that is either a bad law or a law that may be okay, but it shouldn't be enforced in this particular situation, the jury does have a right and even a duty to ignore the law and judge in favor of mercy for the defendant in that case. And this has been a staple of common law since forever, and they've tried to make us forget that, and the judges lie to us about it now. This is a very important issue. You can learn more by Googling the Fully Informed Juror Association, Fully Informed Jury Association, FIJA. We'll be back for some more talk with David Macko in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. Stay tuned. Welcome back. You're listening to another heading into the weekend edition of the Dynamic Duo Show, right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on here every Monday and Friday. Jim Fetzer, the man with whom I do not always agree, comes on Tuesdays through Thursdays. My current guest is David Macko. He's a libertarian candidate for Congress from Ohio, and he is a freedom fighter. Tried out the slogan, repeal the 20th century.
And this one, too.
Yeah?
And this one, too.
Indeed. This one, too. Yeah, yeah. It's not getting any better, at least not yet. But who knows? It's possible that the scale of the disaster that's brewing will be great enough to open up a space for some real changes of course, which, you know, it's not guaranteed that the course will be changed in a positive direction, but at least there's that opportunity.
This is a chance to wake people up, and with the possible world war, a depression that certainly seems to be right on the verge, and the police state that Bush is working so quickly to set up. I was watching Bush on TV this morning, and every time he spoke, the stock market went down further.
That's interesting. When his lips move, he's lying, and when his lips move, the stock market goes down.
Now, fortunately, they didn't have any more reports in the afternoon, so it started a climb back from yesterday's to where it was at the end of yesterday's crash. Let's go into a few positive things. I would like to mention for the people to do after the program is to go to my website, macoforcongress.com. That's macoforcongress.com. The first thing we need to do is abolish the Fed.
Hear, hear.
They've robbed us, the American people, of 99% of the value of our money since 1913. It's a Marxist program that was recommended in the Communist Manifesto. We can't be free if we don't have an honest money system.
Did the Communist Manifesto really recommend that a private cabal of international bankers should seize control of the currency, print all of our currency backed up by nothing, you know, fiat currency created at interest? Did Marx really call for that?
He called for a centralized bank, centralized banking.
Right. Well, I mean, you could theoretically have a central bank that would be keeping the money sound and pursuing policies that were in the interest of the people, could you not?
Theoretically, yes, but it's hardly ever happened. Whenever anyone is given the power to create money, it seems to be something that almost no one can resist. Even our founding fathers, probably the most honest government we had, because they would have been executed for treason if they lost, weren't able to handle the temptations. We still have the phrase, not worth a continental, after 225 years. And every government which has ever tried fiat currencies has ultimately collapsed. The Articles of Confederation government collapsed, and it was replaced by the Constitution.
Right. Well, a central bank and fiat currency are not necessarily the same thing. I mean, you could have either one without the other, couldn't you?
You could, but the temptations are always so great that almost everyone succumbs.
Right. So you favor going back to precious metals and and free market banking?
Yeah, and the legal tender laws. I support Ron Paul's bill to end taxes on transactions in metals so that people can get out of the dollar before it collapses. With these huge robberies of trillions of dollars, the only way that's going to be covered is by inflating the dollar. So we're going to have horrible inflation unless the depression comes first, or we may have an inflationary depression.
So David, why is it that the currency speculators don't seem to understand this? Because the dollar is actually doing pretty well during this catastrophe.
I don't know.
Yet it's clearly doomed. What's going on there?
I don't know. I'm not an expert. I suspect there must be manipulations. You know, the gold and silver were going down for a while. That's obvious manipulation based on, you know, what would rationally happen with the normal people who understand the situation. I don't know what gold and silver and perhaps even platinum have always kept their value for thousands of years. Even in the time of the Roman Empire, you could take an ounce of gold and you can travel anywhere in the known world. Not first class, but you could get around. You can still do that today. You could buy a suit or a toga back then for an ounce of gold. You can still do the equivalent of that today. So gold and silver and platinum, real things, have always maintained value, whereas fiat paper tends to go to zero, so that women have to go with wheelbarrows twice a day to shop to keep the value of their money, as happened in Weimar Germany in the 20s.
Right. You know, I'm still not sure what solution to the monetary crisis I would call for if I were in a position to you know, impose my viewpoint. But I do lean towards what you're suggesting, David, which is getting back to precious metals and away from central banking. Do you think that if we had some antitrust enforcement, we could bust up these gigantic monopoly banks and go back to honest competitive banking?
problem with the antitrust laws, and again, I'm not a trained economist. I took a few courses, and I talked to Dr. Bill Peirce, who was Libertarian candidate for governor in 2006 and was chairman of the economics department at Case Western. But antitrust laws generally, like all of the other regulations, tend to be controlled by the people who are supposed to be regulated. That's been the general trend throughout history. Competition would be much better as a means of breaking down trust and breaking down monopolies.
I don't trust the government.
If
I can completely accept the idea that that competition is self-sustaining, because as I see it, there seems to be a tendency for the winners to get too big. And once they're big enough, then they can collude to shut down the competition and make much more money. And that's usually what happens. So I'm not entirely certain that it's government intervention that's responsible for the creation of monopolies. I think it's almost more of a natural phenomenon.
Well, if the collusion is in violation of the common law, then they should be prosecuted. You know, if they're stealing or committing fraud or lying, obviously, then they should be prosecuted. And after they're convicted, not asset forfeiture before people are convicted, but, you know, part of the punishment is to confiscate your ill-gotten gains. I have no problem with that.
Okay. Well, yeah, part of this, of course, depends on, you know, what the actual situation on the ground is. And it sure looks to me like there's been more and more concentration of financial power over the years, and that these giant international bankers have engineered these kinds of catastrophes, 1929 and now, 7 years after 9/11, this new financial 9/11. These things are actually set up to...
Well, that was the Federal Reserve expanding the money supply in the 20s. And again, the Roosevelt Depression would have ended in 2 years if Hoover first, and he was responsible for it too, and then Roosevelt had not meddled with the economy. They'd stretching it out till Roosevelt got us involved into World War II. And the same thing is happening now. It was government manipulation. It was the huge expansion of credit in the 1990s and in this decade, and then pressuring the banks to loan money to people who, quite frankly, were not creditworthy.
Now, where was that pressure coming from?
The government, of course.
And yeah, you know, I've seen that. I've seen some people claiming that this $700 billion bailout is actually hush money for the financial people who were pressured to do this by the government, and they're getting that $700 billion to keep them quiet so they won't rat out the government.
Well, it's $850 now, and this $850 figure is from the same people who told us the Iraq War would only cost $50 billion. So. I'm not too confident in that $850 billion figure.
Me neither. We'll be back in a moment, so stick around, folks.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Listening to the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. Right now I'm talking from David Macko, the Libertarian candidate for Congress in Ohio. You can find out more about his campaign at MackoForCongress.com. That's M-A-C-K-O for Congress.com. I'm Kevin Barrett, and I'm on the web at BarrettForCongress.us. And David and I seem to think alike on quite a few matters here. Hard to really get much of an argument going with him.
Maybe on health care later on, but I'd rather go with the most important areas first.
Well, that's right. You're absolutely right that we're living in a real downswing of liberty. That the Enlightenment and the American Revolution brought these ideas of freedom into the world, and our nation was founded on the ideal of freedom. That's what holds our country together. We don't have a national identity based on language or ethnicity. We have people from all over the world here, but we have this belief in freedom and justice and fair play and so on. But freedom is at the heart of it, and yet we're completely losing our freedom today. It's completely gone by the wayside, and we need to get back to our roots, I think, if we're going to save this country.
One proposal that will restore much of our liberty and be an economic stimulus is the Liberty Amendment. And again, like the repeal of the Federal Reserve System that has been promoted most recently by Ron Paul, the Liberty Amendment, folks who are listening can find that on Google also at the end of the show. The Liberty Amendment would require the FedGov to divest itself of all properties which are not constitutionally authorized. This includes the 1 million square miles of land, which is over 25% of the entire land area of the United States, within 3 years of the passage of the Liberty Amendment as an amendment to the Constitution. After that, all federal personal income, gift, and death taxes would be repealed. And the 16th Amendment would be repealed. Now, I think that's a real economic stimulus, not a $300 check in the mail or even more.
That does definitely sound like a stimulus. I suppose, you know, just to play devil's advocate here, some people would say, well, wait a minute, if we, you know, give away our national forests and national parks and things like that, isn't that just going to, you know, open them up to, you know, to ruthless exploitation and so on and so forth?
No, we would sell them with restrictive covenants. I don't want a hamburger joint at the high water mark at Gettysburg or a golf course that Old Faithful at Yellowstone either. So you have a restrictive covenant saying what it can be used for, what it can't be used for, and either sell them to the states or sell them to private enterprise. You know, Mount Vernon has always been totally financed privately. No government money has ever gone to Mount Vernon for 150 years.
Well, theoretically, we don't need the federal government owning huge tracts of land. That's not what the Constitution envisioned. That's certainly true.
And square miles. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, I think the Constitution suggests that we should have a lot more local autonomy and state autonomy than we have. It does seem that we've fallen under a much more centralized kind of regime than the Founding Fathers envisioned.
Well, the Ninth Amendment states that, you know, all powers that are not delegated to the Ninth and Tenth Amendment states, that all powers not delegated to the FedGov remain with the people or with the states. Ninth states, of course, that, you know, if it's not listed as right there, that doesn't mean we don't have it. It means that the FedGov can't do that either.
And yet they've gone out and done all sorts of things that they're not authorized to do by the Constitution.
Well, it's very important to remember that 218 members of the House of Representatives could shut down all the bad programs. All revenue measures begin in the House. We could, 215 plus you and me and Ron Paul, stop the war in Iraq tomorrow morning simply by not financing any money for the troops abroad except to bring them home. There's a lot of things we could just 215 other congressmen and you and I and Ron Paul could do.
Well, I've been trying to tell people that, that here in Wisconsin we have this wimpy Democratic incumbent named Ron Kind, who's very much on the payroll of all the special interests. He's a total money magnet. That's why it's going to be pretty tough to beat him. But he's voted for the war at every step along the way. He funds the war. He, you know, extends the deadline, makes it part of the war on terror with no exit date. He's voted for the war at every opportunity, yet he speaks out of the corner of his mouth to his constituents saying, well, I'm not really for the war. I am just voting in favor of giving the troops the tools they need to defend themselves.
I believe that's a political technique called lying. I don't use it, and I don't believe you do either. We wouldn't have counter-endorsed each other. But this is a problem, and the people have to break past the establishment media to understand they're being lied to. That's one of the important things about exposing 9/11, which you are an expert on. I'm no expert. I have enough math to know that it's sort of hard for two planes to knock down three buildings, as Governor Ventura stated. I know that when the golfer Payne Weber died at the controls of his plane, Air Force jets were on his tail, no time at all, to make sure the plane didn't crash into a heavily inhabited area.
That's right. Yet on 9/11, the first signs of an in-flight emergency, which normally would bring a fighter jet to your wingtip within about 10 minutes, started at 8:15 in the morning. And then, supposedly at 9:37, almost an hour and a half later, supposedly a hijacked passenger jet did a stunt maneuver to just fly unopposed into the Pentagon, the world's most heavily defended building. Now, how is that?
If you believe that, you'll believe anything.
Pretty much.
Even the average American is starting to doubt that story.
Yeah. And then the military made up three totally different stories about why there was no air defense response. Now, for the first week, they said, well, we didn't launch any fighter jets until after the Pentagon was hit at 9:37. And then a week later, they completely changed that story and said, well, we actually launched some fighter jets, but we launched them from these bases that weren't the closest bases. And they just got there a hair too late. They got to New York just a hair too late. They got to Washington, D.C. just a hair too late. And that story stood for 2 years. And then in the middle of the 9/11 Commission hearings, they completely switched their story once again and came up with the most preposterous story of all, which they're still telling today, which is it's so discombobulated that you can barely explain it. But, you know, just to tell you the most simple, ridiculous thing about it is that they claim that the military was never even notified of the problems with three out of these four planes until they'd already crashed.
Maybe Cheney didn't notify them.
Maybe.
Yeah, were they lying three times?
Kevin, we're still trying to figure out what's going on in our nation's leadership. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, Jude. A sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey, Jude, don't
Welcome
be
back
afraid.
To the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett, your host. On the web at barrettforcongress.us. And I'm talking with David Macko, my fellow Libertarian congressional candidate. He's on the web at maccoforcongress.com. And, David, I enjoy your hard-hitting writing on your website. It's fun to see a truth teller who's pulling no punches.
You know what my biggest problem was?
What?
Finding synonyms for abolish, repeal, get rid of. I gave up on it finally. That's why you find the word abolish in it about 50 times and repeal another 50.
Right. You know, that's one of the problems when, you know, we're facing this out of control government, this complexity, this Leviathan that we're trying to get under control is, it's hard to frame what we're doing in a positive way rather than a negative way. You know, Ron Paul has done pretty well with his love revolution thing, but, you know, that which is a better way of getting this message to the people than calling him Dr. No. But when you get right down to it, we're against a lot of things, aren't we, David?
Well, that Dr. No issue, yeah. I think he mentioned that the speech in Apple in Neenah, Wisconsin, the last weekend, his wife calls him Dr. No, but she spells it K-N-O-W. We are positive. We're for liberty. We're for prosperity. We're for justice. We're for the principles that made our country great. It's the enemy that is negative. Getting rid of the income tax is a positive thing. That's for 20% more money in the average wallet.
Right. Well, part of the problem is that when you're running to be part of the government, having the government do something seems, sounds like it's a positive thing, and having the, you know, saying the government shouldn't do something sounds like a negative thing. But actually, there are lots of ways of getting things done in the world, other than having the government step in and do them. Throughout most of history, people have been able to form various kinds of, voluntary associations to get things done, and there's no reason why that has to end.
Many more things would get done if the government just got out of the way. Take the Food and Drug Administration restricting so many new drugs and medicines. If people had didn't have the Food and Drug Administration to contend with, like the late Harry Brown said, they would probably live 20 years longer.
Well, the Food and Drug Administration is a tool of these giant pharmaceutical companies. And here's the place where I start to diverge a little bit from certain kinds of libertarian orthodoxies, where, you know, I think that the real government behind the scenes, as often as not, is these gigantic corporations and money centers. And they're the ones who really are pulling the strings, and the formal government becomes just sort of a tool of these people. So, you know, I'm skeptical about, you know, when you just reduce government authority or the government's refereeing function regarding these giant monetary forces, you might just be handing even more power to the real government, which is the secret government behind the scenes.
You'll get no argument from me about corporations. One of the things that libertarians have failed on is not to observe corporations enough. First of all, they're immortal, and second of all, they can't endure pain, which makes it difficult to punish them. But still, they can't be effective parasites if the government is too small to be able to suck much lifeblood from. I'm not being grammatically incorrect there. If we got rid of most of the government, the corporations would have to, there'd be more competition. For example, you know, if you didn't have an income tax or all the government work regulations to put up with, there'd be a lot more competition to the big companies.
Well, that's very possible. At the same time, though, if you look at the kinds of policies that have been foisted on us over the past 20 or 30 years, you know, Milton Friedman economics, deregulation, a lot of that has not necessarily worked out. For instance, the current financial quote-unquote crisis, which we both agree is engineered, was partly engineered by the government stopping this kind of this regulation of these giant financial outfits. Paul Craig Roberts, one of the main guys behind Reaganomics, is on the record now saying that this is the result of deregulation that never should have happened.
There was still that government pressure to force the banks to loan money to people who weren't creditworthy, or with the threats of calling them racist if they didn't. So that may be official deregulation, but it's still unofficial government pressure. And again, if people understood, especially if stockholders understood if they didn't have the idea that the government was there to take care of everything, I would hope they'd go to their stockholders meetings and find out why this guy's getting $40 million when the value of the company decreased 25%. I think a lot of this has been due to the fact that people thought, the government's taking care of it, so I don't have to worry about it.
Well, that's right. But, you know, people do have a limit on how much time and attention they can put into these things. And that's where, again, libertarian thought would tells us a free market would work very well if people were well informed. The thing is that life is so complex, and especially today with the deluge of information that's washing over us at every moment, that it's very, very hard for us to be on top of all these things. And realistically, David, you know, you're sharper than the average tack. Realistically, a large number of people out there are just not going to be on top of this, you know, very large number of things that they have to be on top of to make the free market work.
However, if they weren't falsely lulled into the belief that the government could take care of it all, even the lower end of the bell curve would show a little more attention.
You're probably right.
Before we say the free enterprise system hasn't worked, why don't we try it?
Well,
or try it again, yeah. We haven't had it since 1933, at least.
Right. Well, you know, I'm all in favor of deregulating small business, but, you know, I think that in order to have a real free market system, we do need to have a referee on the field. Just like with the National Football League, we have the team with the worst record getting the top draft pick to keep the thing balanced. Likewise, I do think that we need to have an honest referee on the field of the free market system to bust up the companies and banks and so on that get too big. And of course, the journalism outfits, we need to bust up the media monopolies into thousands of pieces in order to keep a level playing field where there are reasonably low entry barriers so that there can be real competition. Because I don't think there really is much competition, frankly, David.
Can I quote from my favorite media person?
Go right ahead.
John Swinton.
Now, okay.
When and where he made his statement is a matter of question. I don't know. But he certainly, and even as to why it was made, but it's certainly accurate. If you probably recall, he was at a banquet and he was asked to toast the media, and this was his response. Quote, "There is no such thing at this date of the world's history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it. There is not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. I am paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper I am connected with. Others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours my occupation would be gone. The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes."
Don't you know that you can count me out? That's the neocon thing, isn't it? Creative destruction. Kill a million people in Iraq. It'll be a paradise now for the neocon ideal. It'll be a utopia after you poison them all with depleted uranium, murder a million of them. Then it'll be a perfect place. It'll be just right. It'll be a democracy. It'll bring the whole Middle East into a love affair with Israel. Yeah, right. Creative destruction. It's happening in our economy, too, right now, as we speak. These neocons even admit it. You know, destruction, that's what we're all about. Oh, boy.
It might be creative.
Kevin Barrett talking with David Macko. David, you were just reading that fantastic quote telling the truth about what journalists are really paid to do.
Did the statement about intellectual prostitutes get on before the music started?
I think you finished it. Just barely made it. You got the whole quote in there. Who was that again?
That was John Swinton.
John Swinton.
Yes.
Truth in journalism. What a concept.
Yes. You were mentioning creative destruction. Perhaps the destruction would be creative if the neocons were destroyed or at least tried for treason.
Well, that would at least destroy the destruction. I don't know if it would create anything, but it would get a big impediment out of the way.
Create a good feeling for me. You mentioned the term democracy. That's usually a sign that the person who's promoting it is an enemy of liberty because, we're not a democracy. We are a republic. The founding fathers set up our country as a republic, which is a limited government. Democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding on lunch. We know what happens to that if you happen to be the sheep.
Uh-huh.
Getting back to the war issue, we need to bring our troops home from Iraq and Afghanistan immediately. We also need to keep opposing House Concurrent Resolution 362, even though antiwar.com has stated that the neocons may have backed off on that for a time at least, because that would be sanctions against Iran. That's an act of war.
Well, that's right.
We'll be calling for a
blockade of Iran, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And once we start boarding their ships, I mean, that's an act of force. That's an act of war.
Mm-hmm. That's how Roosevelt encouraged the Japanese to attack us and then didn't warn the troops at Pearl Harbor that we had broken the Japanese codes and that they were coming, which is
right.
An act of treason.
That's right, yeah. And, you still get a lot of people saying that that was a good thing. I did a talk recently at a kind of a right-wing church, along with the Republican candidate, the neocon theocrat Paul Stark. It was his territory, and I waded in there. And one of the people brought this up and said that, Roosevelt set it up and knew it was coming and left the troops there, and that was the right thing to do because we had to go out and police the world.
Yeah, so we policed the world into the Cold War. Now we're policing it into World War III. We wouldn't have had to police the world in World War II if Wilson hadn't policed us into World War I. It's just a continuous series of lies and interventions. People need to understand that, otherwise we're facing destruction.
It is the same pattern over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think World War II was especially unfortunate because it left behind a mythology that we were the good guys, stopping the forces of utter and complete evil. And people just internalized that model, and they apply it to all these other situations where clearly we're the bad guys.
I challenge any moral, decent, intellectually honest person to tell me how it could be moral to oppose Adolf Hitler by joining forces with Joseph Stalin. By any objective measure, even if you believe the official figures, Stalin killed many more innocent human beings than Hitler did.
And he was just as crazy. I mean, they were both madmen of the same...
Or worse.
Right. And of course, in doing so, we firebombed innocent civilians in Germany and Japan and dropped nuclear weapons on innocent civilians in Japanese cities. Frankly, I don't really understand why people... See, Auschwitz has a worse ring to it than Hiroshima. To me, mass murdering civilians is mass murdering civilians.
We get back to the media again and to the people who control it. Hitler's Reich lasted for 12 years, but Hollywood will make it go the other 988 unless we
okay.
do something about that.
Well, now that we're getting into your controversial opinions, here's one I really like on your webpage, macoforcongress.com, which I highly recommend. Very lively, good webpage. You come out with some kind words for Sarah Palin,
I'm going to make an addition to that. I didn't know she had an Israeli flag in her office, and she's being assimilated by Henry Kissinger now for Star Trek fans. Think Borg.
right. She's a member of one of these evangelical churches that, mm-hmm. Wants to start World War III in Israel so Jesus will come back and, kill all the unbelievers and beam up the good people to the Starship Enterprise kind of thing.
Well, Jesus will decide when he comes back.
No kidding. No kidding. Where do these people get off thinking that if they start a gigantic war and murder lots of their fellow human beings, that this will somehow get them on the right side of Jesus who will come back and save us all? I mean, this is crazy.
In Christian terms, it's called heresy.
Yeah, I would think so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a Muslim, so I shouldn't be running around telling Christians what to believe, but, Bible.
We welcome anyone who brings up errors. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, yeah, I recently reread the New Testament, and I sure don't see Jesus as some kind of warmonger who wants to kill people with nuclear weapons. This whole thing just doesn't make any sense to me.
Nope. It shouldn't make sense either to the deluded Christians who have been lied to for so long. Unfortunately, they confuse the biblical Israel with the Zionist state that exists on the eastern shores of the Mediterranean. I mean no harm to Israel. I just want to stop giving money to it. If the income tax repeal passes, if people really want to give their money to the state of Israel, or if they want to go there to fight, that's their business. But I don't want to, and the American people don't want to, and we shouldn't.
Well, if the U.S. government stops egging Israel on and throwing money and weapons at it, that problem would be solved overnight.
I agree. You
know, it's very simple. I mean, they could actually get a two-state solution, although I don't know how much longer it's going to be available. Or they could just democratize and declare one state with everybody equal, regardless of ethnicity or religion. Either way, they could easily have peace. They could live there as long as they want. The Jews in that area would be quite secure and very prosperous. They do a lot better than the Afrikaners have done in South Africa.
Yes.
But there seems to be a death wish or something. These people are just, you know, trying to push things until they, you know, get some real problems.
Israel, Mexico, and the rest of the world, as far as I'm concerned, they can do whatever they want as long as they don't do it with my tax money or with the blood of Americans.
Well, hear, hear. I have to agree with that. You know, one thing I liked in your kind words about Sarah Palin was, you pointed out that except in very rare instances where the president is a mentally retarded puppet of a maniacal vice president, such as the current administration, vice presidents have very little, if any, influence on policy. So it's wiser to support Bob Barr. And that goes double once you take into consideration the downside of Sarah Palin, such as her, you know, her predilection for World War III.
I'm going to update. I haven't had time. I'm going to update my Palin commentary.
Okay. I don't think that's terrible, though, David.
I'm just too optimistic. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are a couple of good things about her. The real ID thing. I actually like the fact that she was part of the Alaska secessionist movement. That shows creative thinking to me.
And she is pro-life.
She's pro-life. She's, you know, in many ways for smaller government, anti-real ID and stuff. Yeah, I mean, she, you know, there are worse Republicans out there.
but she'll be bored soon now.
Okay.
She'll lose her soul anytime.
That's right. Well, we've reached the end of today's show, David, so why don't you send people to your website, which I highly recommend.
That's macoforcongress.com, MacoForCongress. It's been a pleasure being here, and if you ever want me on again, I should be available most of the time, although I'll be a lot of candidates nights for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I saw your schedule. It's pretty tight. It's been great having you, David, and I will try to get you back on hopefully before the election, and hopefully after the election, too, we can celebrate.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Good night.
Night. That was David Macko of MackoForCongress.com. This is Kevin Barrett of BarrettForCongress.us signing off.